So what kind of laws would you like brought in? What would happen to the money, and what would happen to the children after a divorce?
I think it should, the law should be quite specific. Things such as that if a person has done no substantive wrong in, you know, the family or matrimonial matters, if a person's done no substantive wrong, then their rights should be protected. So we should remove the no-fault principle. So if, you know, you have a wife who commits adultery, then she should be held accountable for that. And she should forfeit something of her rights, not the man, as currently happens at the present time. But it is a matter of defining the outcome in terms of children, who will have custody of the children, that each of the parties will keep the money they have earned, including the money they have earned during the marriage, and that maintenance for children will be defined as only being half of what is required to actually barely maintain the child, in other words, the essential provisions of food and accommodation and clothing and so on. Not as at present, where the Child Support Act and agency just, you know, the law says that the child should benefit from the parent's income. So if a man is on a high salary, he will be required to hand over whatever it is, 10 or 20% of his income, no matter how high it is, even when the woman is a millionaire, perhaps, or marries a millionaire, that man is still required to hand over a significant proportion of his income, on the basis that it's in the child's best interest that that should happen. But the maintenance should only be for the real out-of-pocket expenses of maintaining the child, and only for half of that, because the woman should also be required to pay half. And also, another aspect of this, of child maintenance, is that none of the money is presently accountable. So anyone handing over maintenance for the child has no means of knowing whether or not the money is actually spent on the child. It's handed over to the woman, of course. It might be spent on a new frock or a nice holiday. The man has effectively no means of knowing, as the money is not accountable. So all these things need to be put down in the written law, in sufficiently clear terms, and also that written law should ensure that the judges cannot vary, don't have the discretion to vary the terms of those laws. So it's not just a matter of putting down the outcome in sufficient detail, but also ensuring that those outcomes can't be varied by a judge in some judge's discretion.
And do you have in mind a default custody arrangement, such as shared parenting or something like that?
Well, certainly, shared parenting should be the norm, unless someone's done some very substantive wrong in the situation, or unless the child is under some serious danger of harm. But, you know, if one of the spouses has seriously misbehaved, I think that it's important that there should be some sanction against them. I mean, if we have rules, as we have at present, where any behaviour goes, and as we have at present, the woman is actually rewarded for misbehaviour, there's no sanction against misbehaviour at all. Well, of course, that sends a message to people, women in particular, that they can do anything they wish and they'll even be rewarded for bad behaviour. That message isn't sent to men, of course, because they rarely get custody and they rarely get their proper share of the money they've earned during the marriage and of the money they brought into the marriage. So it's important to, you know, one of the functions of law, of course, is to moderate people's behaviour in society. And the function of matrimonial family law is to moderate people's behaviour within matrimony and within the family. And we've lost that completely. That function of law moderating people's behaviour has just disappeared. It doesn't exist anymore, not as far as women are concerned anyway, because they get all the benefits. It in a sense, is moderating men's behaviour, but whether they behave well or badly, the outcome is pretty much the same for them. It's a bad outcome for them. So the law has ceased to become a factor for moderating people's behaviour in marriage and in the family.
So if we were in a situation where the woman had an affair, would that be counted against her?
Yes, it should certainly be a factor. I mean, we haven't drawn up, if the children group was to be was asked to help draw up some rules about these things, I think we'd certainly have a factor in there for it. But I think we also recognise that the children do have rights to an ongoing relationship with both their parents, and that both their parents should have some influence in how the children are brought up and regarding decisions over schooling and various other things, like maybe religious education, which many parents are concerned about, or any other aspects of the children's upbringing. The parents should, unless they've done something seriously wrong, both be able to contribute to that.
So that's your basic message, that marriage is being destroyed and we need to change the law to correct that?
Well, we've got to recognise that marriage and the rules of the family have been seriously destroyed by feminist and action as well as by judges' discretion over the last 50 years, and that we need to restore order in this area and restore proper laws. It's only by our MPs in Parliament becoming active in this area, because the government itself isn't interested in these issues. The General Group has got it in mind to brief all MPs on this matter, because that hasn't been done before. A few individuals have met MPs, so for example John Campion, when he was leading the Cheltenham Group and UK Men's Movement, had agreed to did meet with Geoff Hoon when he was in the Lord Chancellor Department with myself, and did brief him, and a number of other leading individuals have met ministers, but no one's made a breakthrough. We really need to brief MPs on a large scale and try and get a group of MPs engaged in this matter and to take forward a project, if you wish, to restore proper laws, proper written laws in the area with proper principles involved, protecting innocent people's rights and also limiting the discretion that judges have in this area. But until we get that, one possible lead-in might be through the Scottish Parliament, where we have our Scottish members have much better access to the MSPs than we in England have to the Westminster MPs, and so that is a possible route forward which we'll be looking at. But certainly I would like to see every MP fully briefed on this matter. In fact, I have on my agenda to summarise the various children group reports into the history of the church, which I've just been outlining in this interview, and pointing out the importance of MPs doing this. And let's see if we get a real project going to restore order in this area.
Oh, one other question. Is it true that some of the European Convention on Human Rights has been left out of the British Convention?
I don't believe so. The important articles in the European Convention affecting men's rights are Article 8, which guarantees respect for family and private life. Article 1 of the First Protocol, which guarantees respect for one's possessions. And of course Article 14, which guarantees that there'll be no discrimination in the enjoyment of all the other rights specified in the Convention on any grounds, which includes sex, race, religion, and so on, but obviously the important one there being sex. So the important articles we've got presently are Article 8, guaranteed respect for family and private life, Article 1 of the First Protocol, guaranteeing respect for possessions. But yes, there is Article 5 of Protocol 7, which guarantees equality of treatment between spouses during and after marriage. Now, the UK government hasn't signed Protocol 7 ever. So even before the Human Rights Act 98 came into force, the UK hadn't ratified Protocol 7 of the European Convention at the Court of Human Rights, and therefore individuals couldn't take action under that particular article. So it was never built, it was never ratified by the UK government at Strasbourg, and it isn't part of the Human Rights Act 1998 at this point in time either, and that's obviously a very important article so far as men are concerned, because it, as I say, guarantees, I forget the exact wording, but it's something to the effect of guaranteeing equality of treatment before, during and after marriage.